It's been 2 years since real conversation actually dropped, and we had to take a little bit of a break, but we're here. So welcome to Real Conversations with me. I've missed you, all of you, each and every person who has watched, well, listened to all my videos, all my episodes. Who have resonated with my views. Real Conversations is really dear and near to my heart because these are some topics that I never got to share because of the stigma, because of the views, because of all the things that comes with it, and I get to share with you guys. So I hope you enjoy season two. Season two is going to be so different than season one. Season one is just mostly a lot of my diary compilations of my thoughts on different topics not many people talk about. But season two gets to be real, gets to be raw, gets to be terrifying. But I hope that every single thing I talk to you about, it can touch someone's soul and it can definitely make you feel better. So, subscribe. Share, and I hope you love this as much as I did making it. And I have missed each and every one of you. Hi, it's me again. This episode is very sensitive and it's very real, it's very raw, and I'd like everyone to take a moment to breathe because there will be a lot that will be shared about me that I haven't really told many people. But I think this would be a wonderful way of my journey to just heal. So, if you have not listened to any of my podcast episodes, this is Real Conversation with Sanma. I am EJ. You can call me EJ, Sanma, EJ Busanma, Sanma, whatever you like to call me. Not Sumna, by the way. But this episode is about rape. It's about sexual assault. It's about everything that comes with it, and I get to share my story. If by any chance any of my conversations or anything I share here with you is too graphic, I hope you take time for yourself. And this is all about just showing some love to people out there who are survivors of sexual assault. To just know that you are loved, you are seen, and everything will be okay. And your journey will be so different from someone else's journey. So never feel like you have to be someone that you're not, or never feel like you have to rush your healing process. So this is my story. I'm Sanma. I volunteer as a hotline and medical advocate to support survivors of sexual and domestic violence. I was sexually assaulted at 7. I was on my way to the village with my mum, my dad in the front, and my uncle and I at the back. I wore a skirt because that's something I felt comfortable with, but never did I know that I would be sexually assaulted by my blood. My uncle put the duvet over me as I felt his hands up my skirt and into my vagina. I felt his cold hands in my private part and was mortified at 7 as I saw him lick his fingers with my vagina taste on his hands. I am almost 24 now and my parents don't know because they will kill him. I know my dad will. And that guilt will haunt me for the rest of my life. At 11, I was sexually assaulted by my mom's best friend. My mom's best friend's brother, actually. I played video games in his room because he wasn't in, and I mean, I didn't know he was lurking in the background. I remember him coming out of the shower naked and approach me. And I swear for a second, I swear for a second, I knew it was fucked up, but put his dick in my mouth at 11. And I never knew that the world my mom and dad were protecting me from had horrible people near us who could cause harm. I have been nervous since being sexual with all my partners, because oh, how that made me feel. Been nervous to be sexual with anyone since then because I felt violated. I felt used. And I was young to know what was right and what was wrong, but I knew that was not okay. Bear with me, it's really difficult sharing, but I think it's a great way to heal for me. Almost 6 years ago, I was at a frat party here in Lowell, Massachusetts, where UMass actually never came forward. And I was crossed, I was high and drunk, having a great time with my friends, and got so messed that I passed out in the nearby room. Until suddenly I felt thrumping from behind. I remember mumbling as tired as I was. I said, "Please stop. Please stop." But the person did not. The guy did not. I knew that I was getting raped. I felt pressure on my back, knowing that someone was taking the one thing that made me a woman. As he finished, I couldn't believe it. I laid there, pants down, not knowing anything. My girlfriend at the time came in to check on me, and after that, I was taken home. But since then, a part of me gets nightmares. After that day, I had to get an abortion, and I have never told anyone ever before, which is terrifying saying out loud. I am grateful, honestly, to have an abortion. I'm grateful to have that liberty to have a safe abortion, to get rid of such an awful reminder of a life that could have been brought into this world with so much fear and worry. And that's my story. I know. This was probably difficult to hear. I just hope that this just goes to so many people who feel like they cannot share what happened to them. Make them feel like they're not alone in this. Make them feel that life will get better. And make each and every one of us understand that the healing process will be so different from my healing process. It's been years since this happened to me, and it was just recently that I came forward for the first time at a rally to share my story, and I remember breaking down and crying because I've never told anyone. I've never told my parents, who are supposed to be my number one protectors. Not many of my friends know about this, about me. And sometimes you feel like you have to keep this facade to hold on and be strong, but then relationships crumble. It crumbles because there's lack of trust in the people because you don't know. I was recently sexually assaulted by someone who I thought was a friend. I basically was at Encore, and I was very much having a great time in the club, dancing the night away, but it was really late and my friend had left, and I'd never told my friend. I'm not upset at her for leaving me, but it is what it is. It happened. But I saw this friend who I haven't seen in such a long time, and I remember one of my good friends, She told me that this guy had such a massive crush on me when we were in college together, and I was just like, oh, that's so wild, that's so crazy, I can't believe that happened. Never giving him time of the day, I've never made any advances to make him think I'm into him. And that was one of the reasons why I decided to not drink alcohol, because alcohol really inhibits a lot of your sensory emotions. It inhibits your mind. It makes you slower. It, for me, typically, like, I get this intense rush for like 2 hours on alcohol, and then I have this depressive state right after, and I don't like the depressive state. And this person knew I was intoxicated and saw me, and I was like, oh, hi, reconnected. And he was like, you know, how are you? It's good to see you. I was like, yeah, it's been like forever. It's been like 4 or 5 years, right? He was like, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, I'm waiting for a friend. I'm supposed to go stay at her place and stuff like that. I literally just met her at the club, but she offered for me to stay with her since my friend left me and drove off. And he was like, oh, don't worry, I can drive you home. Innocent me. I know, silly me for putting my trust in someone. It was awful. It was absolutely terrifying and awful when I got into the car and he opened the door for me and he basically came to my seat as I sat inside and basically gave me a kiss, and I was still intoxicated, but I was just like, what the fuck? Like, what just happened? How is this possible? And he thought that me being intoxicated was a great moment to make out with me and assume that I wanted to go home with him. Took me home, had sex with me with no consent, and fucking gave me chlamydia. I know. Fucking dickhead. Fucking dickhead. It made me realize that I need to have fun with no alcohol, really. No alcohol is the best medicine, trust me. When you realize that you can have the best time with nothing in your system, and you trick your brain to actually have fun, it's the best feeling ever. And many thanks to my girl, Alyssa, because she taught me how to do that. So I won't take all the credit, but it's been really fun just having a great time with no alcohol. But moving on, what is this experience teaching me? This experience is teaching me to stand up and be an advocate against domestic and sexual violence and sexual assault. That's the one reason why I became a volunteer. I get to listen to people, get to listen to survivors on the phone, offer my support, my advice, my resources, and transfer them to the appropriate places to get the help. I come from a country where so many things around rape, sexual assault, is looked down upon, especially for the victims. They are said, where were you at the time of that? You were dressed provocatively. What did you do on this fine day? What happened on this beautiful day? Which wasn't even beautiful because that person's life got turned upside down. But instead of us thinking of them as humans and seeing how we can make them feel okay, basically everything just went down to shit because they are blamed for the misfortune that happened to them. So, what are some ways that we can all look out for each other? So, there's something called bystander intervention. So, being an active bystander means when you're going to a club, going to a party with people, with your friends, go with the same people, leave with the same people. Don't leave your friend with someone that you don't know. Be mindful of your drinks. When you go to a party, don't leave your drinks and go to the bathroom and come back and drink the drink. Take your drink with you or chug it. But don't assume that you are in a safe environment because there has been so many people who've been roofied, sexually assaulted, raped, and even worse, murdered and kidnapped. So let's all look out for each other. Active bystanders are you see something, you say something. When you see someone acting weird and shady, call the person out. Get someone else to be there with you. And everyone needs to understand this is that our gut, when we have an instinct, when something happens and our body gets so cold and like there's this weight all over your shoulder or your body, it's like heavy. Always trust it. Always trust that your body is giving you signals or your brain is giving you signals that something's not right. Ladies, understand that you have to look out for each other and understand that yes, it happens mostly to women, but also know that sexual assault, rape also happens to men. And men, it is okay to ask for help. Never feel like, oh, you deserved it. Oh, this is a great thing because you're sexually assaulted, now you're a man. You need to offer your consent to anyone. You need to ask for help anyone, especially when you felt like you were being violated by someone. I recently dated someone who was very big on consent, and the first time we met in New York, and he basically asked me, like, can I kiss you? Can I do this? Can I do that? That was consent, and that was really sexy, and that was really appreciated. So it's okay to ask for consent, and there's affirmative consent when you are in the right state of mind. Both of you are consenting to things that you want to be done and things that you cannot absolutely tolerate, and trying to see that, hey, let's respect each other's boundaries and let's respect each other's opinions on things and let's not push it, right? That's consent. A lot of misconceptions around sexual assault or sexual violence is that when you're in a relationship, you can never be sexually assaulted. You can't be because if you tell your partner, I don't like this type of sexual act, I don't like being this done to me, and your partner does not respect it and tries to do it anyway. If you're not horny, if you don't want to have sex with your partner, and your partner pushes you to try and have sex, or just says, lay down, I'll just have sex with you, that's not consent. That's pushing the limit, that's pushing the boundaries, and that's not okay. And I just want each and every person to know that there's so much healing that needs to be done for everyone, and there's so much education that needs to be done with everyone. Education in understanding the policies, and this is my take on the policy, right? The policy in place, especially from Trump, does not favor the survivors. And if you read it, you would see that it does give. I'm going. And then it makes you like understand the different things and like the different ways in which you can relay your conversations to each other. And one thing I have to say about this whole issue and the whole like sexual assault is that it's not your fault. Never judge yourself, never blame yourself for what happened to you. The fault is at the perpetrators. And also going back to the policy that doesn't favor the survivors, it does favor the perpetrators if you look at the policy in depth. But we hope that Biden's administration, it gets amended. It's really something to think more about and think, how can we move around those policies to support people. How can we do that? How can we ensure that every single person feels heard, feels listened to, and every single person feels like if they share with someone, they will be there to support. If they need support in like going to report it to maybe the school they're in or to like the police, how well do they think that the administration will really take it seriously? So those are a lot of things that come in play. And also where you are really comes in play, because the country or what the policies are, especially looking at Title IX and all of that, if you're in a country where these are not really structured policies, it might be difficult. But I just hope that each and every person feels like they can share how they feel, because I know it's difficult. And any survivor listening to this, I know how you feel. And I know it's difficult to just come forward and share. But I really, really want you to know that every single thing will be okay. And I really hope that when you're ready, that you have a group of people who will be your biggest, brightest supporters. Because that in itself is all that matters. When you have people who are rallying around you, people who believe in you, who believe that you can do this. But you definitely, definitely, definitely know that every single thing will work out really well. And I'm sending all my love, all my care, and all my happiness to each person. Because, I mean, so much love, so much love, so much love for you. And so much happiness. And I know that this life someday would be a world free of sexual violence. Someday. I don't know if it's now, but someday it would be. So I cried a little bit in this episode. I cried just a little bit. I cried a little bit, just a little bit, but I am very, 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 very grateful to be in a country where there are active conversations around sexual assault, because if not, I don't know when I would ever be able to share my story or feel safe to even do so. So, this is me. Love you.
Hello, my name is Marvin Sluk. I'm doing a podcast for sociology, and I'm going to be asking my guest about specific questions about her race and how that affects her in her career and her life, and basically all the good stuff. So let me let my guest introduce herself, because I'm bad at introducing sometimes.
Hi, I'm so honored being here and answering your questions. My name is Sanma Gundu. I'm actually an international student from Nigeria, so it's really amazing getting to answer your questions today.
Okay, so I'm honored to have you on this mini little podcast, and this is going to be fun, hopefully. So my first question is, how is race evident in your life?
Race is evident in everything I do. I think every action I have has honestly had a huge impact because of the skin color. I am really proud to be a Black woman, but there's so many things that I know that I have to prove myself twice as much as someone who does not have the privilege, twice as hard as those who have the privilege. I have to, like, and also as a woman, like, there are jobs that we're not able to take because they feel like it's automatically meant to go to the man. My everyday, being a Black woman, I have to, like, show that I am someone who's going to be very successful. Like, I have to always be on my toes, because if I don't do something right, I'm going to be judged. And sometimes I don't feel as comfortable as I love it because I am in a room filled with like so many like white people. I go to this event, I'm like the only one who looks like me. And it feels like, who can I go to for support? So absolutely, race goes to everything. Like the person I date, you know, person is like, the person is white, so like I get judged based on dating someone who's white. So it's really like confusing, and it makes me feel like I cannot really be myself just because of the skin color of my body.
So the next question is, what benefits or disadvantages do you feel like you have in your country because of your race? So since you're like an international student, what, like, do you feel like your race here benefits you or does it not?
I feel like my race is there's like a lot of like cons to the pros, to the point where like there's this mindset that my people, like black people, are all like either terrorists, like we want to go shoot somewhere or like go bomb somewhere. You know, people just feel like they still have that slave mentality that, like, you know, people who are black people can only work certain jobs because they cannot like see themselves far up in life. And like going on in the school, like, I wonder, there's little to no representation. Like, I don't see a lot of black professors or Latinx professors. There are not many people who can show the diversity. But then I see a lot of black people as like custodians or people who clean the building. So that doesn't really show that much empowerment as I usually would like love in like certain places. So yes, there's a lot of disadvantages because there's still that slavery mentality of like you have to work this amount, you know, this certain jobs. And I feel like a lot of people of color are being like, they're working more than they're being paid. I talk to a lot of like people who work in like a hospice, or, you know, they're working like healthcare. They're working this many hours because they feel obligated to, but they're not being paid for as much as they should be. So yes, there's a huge disadvantage.
So does that also apply where you're from? So since you're like internationally from Nigeria, mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's predominantly, you know, black there. Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that disadvantage there?
No, not as much, because I think the one thing that makes it disadvantage is if you're someone who doesn't come from wealth, if you're not someone who is financially stable in Nigeria, you're not really going to go that far, because we have a lot of poverty. We have a lot of people struggling to even like have a roof over their heads. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous, which is like, you have to be a middle class man in Nigeria to feel like you're secured. And the thing about there compared to here is like the exchange rate is absolutely absurd. Like, you could be a millionaire back home, but like here you'd just be like in hundreds of dollars or like thousands of dollars, which is like your worth. So that's like a whole different disadvantage as well, like the money wise. And then also there's like corruption. Like, if you're someone who is very like, you have a great integrity, you know your worth, you know you cannot just like, what's the word? You know you cannot just like always like bribe policemen or something. Like, you're not necessarily going to go far in Nigeria because there's so much bribery and corruption.
Okay, and then do you think like about your race, you know, being black, like something like you know, daily basis, like, do you think about that or do you just not? It's just like something you don't think about.
I think my race plays a huge role in who I am. I think seeing myself, because as an international student, we're like ineligible for a lot of things here. So being a black woman, I have to prove myself twice as hard. I have to go like I have to do extremely well to be remembered. I have to do more activities in school to have someone even know my name. But my race plays a huge role, especially when I go to an event and no one looks like me. No one like goes through what I've gone through. So it just like, absolutely, race plays a huge thing in my life. I think it brings me great joy seeing like different like variety of people like coming together and say like, we need more representation. We need more people saying that, you know, you look like me and I feel like I belong here, compared to not having anyone that looks like you.
Okay, so I came up with two more questions I wanted to ask you. Now I was thinking about, so one question is, like, have you ever heard about the concept called, you know, the like glass ceiling, basically?
Do you mind explaining more as to what you mean by that?
So basically, the glass ceiling is a concept where, like, in your specific career, the higher you go, you're gonna meet with like an invisible ceiling, like a barrier that, like, because you're not, you know, a person of this specific race or you're not part of the majority, you can't continue to move in higher position. For example, right now, the majority of like high paying officials in the US is mostly white males, because white people are the majority right now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that in your career, like whatever you're majoring, you're gonna reach like a glass ceiling at some point?
Absolutely. I'm currently a master's student in public health epidemiology, and someday I hope to work for CDC before I go to med school. And like I think I'm about to reach that glass ceiling for me, because CDC mostly hires people who are citizens, and I am an international student. So that's like a huge block for me right now. And I hope to like find amazing jobs that will sponsor me and help me like move forward in life. And absolutely, in every situation you are in, you're going to find a situation where like you're stuck. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't like reach out to the right people to get like help for it. And I am so grateful to my mom, because she's like a huge inspiration for me, where like it took her a long time to get promoted. Like, her former bosses did not want to promote her because she was a woman, and also like because she was very like outspoken, so they wanted to silence her. But my mom, she kept pushing, she kept doing late night works, even though she wasn't being paid for those late night works. And she showed up until finally a few years ago, she got promoted to like manager of her branch in the oil company she works at.
So would that be the same response? Like, if you decide, you know, I mean, you're going back to your home country, would that be a thing for you, the glass ceiling, since it's majority of it is black people, the workforce?
I wouldn't necessarily, do that. I think if I go home to practice, I will absolutely do a lot more empowerment and do a lot more, like, you know, outreach to make people understand, like, hey, you should get promoted based on the work you do. If you're an excellent person, regardless of your gender, your sexuality, your race, you should be promoted more than someone who barely does the work and gets promoted.
Yeah. So our last question is like a concept that's been around for a long time. It's called Pan-Africanism. Have you like heard of it, or are you like familiar with it?
I'm a little familiar, but you can also share for someone who probably doesn't know.
So basically, Pan-Africanism is the idea that African descendants who have in common interests should be unified.
Okay.
So do you think that, you know, type of concept, you know, that type of thinking in our community is like a benefit for us, or is it just like a detriment?
That's an interesting question. I think, is it possible to be like both ways? Because I think that's the one thing that, no offense, like we always like, it's quite generational. Like, our parents teach us this and then their parents taught them this, but like having that mentality is just, it could be really detrimental in some ways, because our values, like when I came here, there's so many things that like my parents told me not to do that, like when I got to meet
those people, they're incredible people. So it's just like, we're trying to build a sense of community, but like a lot of the things that are being embedded in our heads could be really detrimental. And we want to like be more together than just like almost like spreading hate. Because for me, thinking of this in that way is just like, I want to be as welcoming and like make someone else feel like a sense of belonging. But there's some things that my parents have taught me, and I love them, that you obviously wouldn't want to say that aloud, almost.
It's like one last one, I'm curious. So like, I asked you about Pan-Africanism. Like, for example, this concept is really popular in the U.S. because of, you know, a history of slavery and like the racism that we're facing right now. Is that like a topic that is brought up in like your home country or no?
That topic is silently thought about in our country. I think I remember going to a place where there was so many, like, it was like a slavery pot in Nigeria. We also have the point of no return, like the sea where slaves were taken and they were never brought back. Those are the times where we try and honor them, but we don't necessarily talk a lot about slavery. When I realized that, because I had family, like my ancestors were slaves, and it really was like that thing that we don't talk about, but it's that elephant in the room. That's why, like, when I came here, like, I'm happy that they were trying to like bring awareness to this, but also like back home, it almost felt like we were taught to absolutely like remember those people who actually like did the slaves, like Christopher Columbus, like Mungo Park, like all those people who were Europeans who like did not so great things. They were making us remember those things in class for like history or geography. That's like the part that makes it even more messed up, because back home they made it so normal, but like here we get to learn like, oh my god, these people actually did a lot worse. So we didn't really have that back home. We don't like talk like that about slavery because it's like a really touchy subject. We know like what's really like went on behind the scenes.
Okay, then you answered my question.
Yeah.
Well, this is all the questions I had. Thank you for joining me in my mini fun podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And yeah, so, well, this is the end.